Machine learning models learn patterns and relationships from data to make predictions or decisions. The quality of the data influences how well these models can represent and generalize from the data. Nihit Desai is the co-founder and CTO at Refuel AI. The company is using LLMs for tasks such as data labeling, cleaning, and enrichment. He joins the show to talk about the platform and how to manage data in the current AI era. This episode of Software Engineering Daily is hosted by Sean Falconer. Check the show notes for more information on Sean's work and where to find him.
Nihit, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. I'm really excited to talk about Refuel and some of the cool things that you guys are doing over there. And, you know, I was thinking as I was sort of preparing for us having this conversation today, like, I think generally people kind of understand now that we're entering this like AI revolution. Like everyone's talking about AI, and particularly generative AI and LLMs over the last year and a half. And we're entering this AI era. But really, there's no AI without data, and in particularly high quality data. And I've often said, and I probably stole this from someone, but you know, data is the love language of AI. And in a lot of ways, like the less sexy headline is that we're entering a massive quantity of quality AI data era. It's probably like sells less, you know, gets less clicks, but it's kind of the reality. So can you talk a little bit about why data for AI is so important? What are some of the challenges with accessing quality data today?
So in some sense, data quality is everything. It's a source of all knowledge and behavior that the model will learn from, that any new AI system will learn from. And it's that the performance of any AI system is limited by how good is the data and how much of it is there and how representative is it of the final application, the final kind of use case in which the system will be plugged, right? There's a few challenges when it comes to acquiring good quality data for AI systems today. And roughly, like maybe I can walk through what the challenges are in each step of the pipeline. I think kind of at the top of the funnel, there's the collection or acquisition of data. There's kind of wide sources of data to draw from. There's the public kind of web data, where there's challenges around just the scale of it, the freshness, assessing the reliability of data sources. There's user data that's publicly available, but of course, like it's, you know, there's some challenges around, you know, things like privacy policies of various platforms, in platforms like, say, Reddit, YouTube, etc. There's a lot of creative works of art kind of data, images, music, books, copyrights, etc. But yeah, and you know, broadly, like collecting and acquiring all of this data is just expensive, right? It's expensive to acquire them, to store them, to really kind of, and this is in some sense, like really just the first step of the process. We haven't done anything meaningful with this data yet. We're just acquiring it. The next step often is kind of cleaning and curation. Here, there's challenges and questions around, okay, how do we ensure that this data is representative in some sense across geographies, across cultural nuances, across languages? So broadly, a lot of the questions here are tend to be focused on like, how do we ensure that the data that we're feeding to these AI systems is representative of the audience or like the user base, like the kinds of applications, people that will be using this in the future. And then like, you know, curation is important just for efficient training. I mean, a lot of the distributions of data in the real world tend to be lopsided. There's overrepresentation and underrepresentation of various kind of slices of it. And it's really important to you know, do things like deduplicate, normalize it, so as to make sure that your model isn't wasting time in some sense, looking at and learning from data that's quite redundant. And then there's like the last kind of challenge of just enrichment and labeling, right? Like you've collected all of your data, you've cleaned it, normalized it, curated it. And now there's the question of, okay, how do we label this data so that the model can actually learn something meaningful from it? Traditionally, like all the data labeling has been kind of very, very human, operationally intensive. Manual labeling is kind of both time consuming, it's prone to errors, it's prone to biases. And there's like the question of how do we ensure that these human preferences, again, are representative of the entire user base? These are like some of the kind of challenges I would highlight.
Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack there. So just going back to like data quality, would you say that the quality of the data is also one of the things that's like sort of like a competitive edge? If we're thinking about like LLMs in particular, like there's all these, you know, there's a ton of models available, and like is really the sort of separator in some sense between, you know, I don't know, a Llama 2 and a Mistral, the quality of the inputs, because this is kind of like, you know, garbage in, garbage out.
You described it very well. In some sense, like, we can think of the two axes for improving performance of any AI system is the data axis and the model axis. And in the limit, broadly, you know, the kinds of model architectures, the training schemes, just broadly, how do we get these models to learn? All of that, we see a convergence of, right? Everything from GPT 3.5 to Claude to Llama 2 to Mistral, all of them are broadly the same architectures. And it's the same architecture based on this kind of paper that came out in 2017, 2018, I believe, from Google that introduced the transformer architecture, right?
Mm-hmm. Attention is all you
need. Right. Yeah, exactly. Attention is all you need. And so really the biggest axis that we've seen kind of in our user customer base at Refuel and broadly what we see at large in the ecosystem, right, is that data access. Like, how do you acquire, collect, you know, clean data at scale? And then that becomes like the kind of differentiator over time, because that's what, you know, leads to differentiated performance behavior in the model.
So there seems like there's a lot of problems with actually getting the data to a state where you would want to train on, because there's part of it's like, okay, first, how do you get access to the data? But mm-hmm. then there's also, you need to navigate potentially things like especially if you're scraping data from the web, like copyright. I know, for example, there's been issues around like pulling source code from GitHub and what open source license is it on, and how does that impact code that gets generated? Is it under the same license if it was inspired by that? Or if I pull information from a book that was scraped, is that, you know, copyright infringement and stuff? And then there's ethical issues on top of that. And then there's also all the labeling data. So what are some of the things that essentially companies are doing today to try to like navigate this, the data collection and cleaning and labeling process? Like, how is that done essentially without, like, are they using tools of that? Or is it mostly like a manual process in some sense?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I would say there's a few categories of problems that we just highlighted here. Everything to do with collection of vast quantities of data, some of which is copyrighted, some of which has licensing issues, some of it like has kind of questions associated with them as well. I think a lot of this is in the domain of what we think of as language model pre-training. We're starting completely from scratch in terms of the kind of model parameters or model weights. And we're feeding it just trillions of tokens of these kind of, in some sense, human-generated data, right? Because that is ultimately kind of what the sum total of the internet represents. And we're just training the model to learn this representation. It's completely task agnostic. It's use case agnostic. We're just getting it to learn our language in some sense, hence the language model. And of course, I use the term language model like a little bit more. Yeah, like it is meant to cover kind of other modalities of data as well. Audio, video, text, images, all of them broadly work the same way of the transformers, right? So I think there's a specific set of, there aren't that many companies, doing large-scale model pre-training just yet. So I think those challenges do tend to be focused and limited to, the OpenAIs, the Anthropics, the Metas of the world. And I believe, that it's, of course, an active kind of ongoing, I think, area of discussion and debate around what's okay, what's not okay, how should, artists, writers, et cetera, whose work is being used in directly or indirectly, how should they be compensated in some way, should we ask for permission, et cetera. And then there's like a set of problems that's a little bit downstream of that, where the prevalence of that problem is much more widespread. It's pretty much every organization, every team that wants to use AI systems in some way, which is around how do we, once we take this pre-trained model off the shelf, chances are it's going to be great for prototyping, but then it's not going to be good enough to take into production as it is, right? And it typically needs some tweaking, some customization, either in the form of what we call in-context learning, fine-tuning, potentially some reward modeling on top of it, where the type of data that we need to label and collect is much more use case specific. And there, of course, a set of challenges are like a little bit different in terms of, how do you label this data? How do you ensure that the evaluation that we're doing is good and relevant to your task? So maybe these are like some of the two things I'd highlight. I'm a lot more kind of familiar with the latter, so happy to dive into it more.
Yeah, I think you raise a good point there in terms of the building like a foundation model is probably going to be only like an activity that's taken on by very like specialized companies that are able to do that at scale, have the means to do it. Kind of like, you know, public cloud, like not everybody's doing public cloud. It's like four companies that are doing that, right? So you're eventually, there'll probably be even more convergence from the foundation models where maybe there's only going to be, you know, sort of four or five companies that are really doing that, that have the means to, you know, keep that going and continually update them and do it at scale and purchase the GPUs and all that sort of stuff. So, but a lot of companies are going to be able to be, will be starting with that as a base. And then they're sort of, you know, modifying them through fine tuning or other means to build more domain specific things that solve specific like application problems that are for their company.
As a listener of Software Engineering Daily, you understand the impact of generative AI. On the podcast, we've covered many exciting aspects of Gen AI technologies, as well as the new vulnerabilities and risks they bring. HackerOne's AI red teaming addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses launching new AI deployments. Their approach involves stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. Within the HackerOne community, over 750 active hackers specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and safety testing. In a single recent engagement, a team of 18 HackerOne hackers quickly identified 26 valid findings within the initial 24 hours and accumulated over 100 valid findings in the two-week engagement. HackerOne offers strategic flexibility, rapid deployment, and a hybrid talent strategy. Learn more at hackerone.com/AI. That's HackerOne.com/AI.
So we've been talking a lot about, like, you know, labeled data and some of these other challenges, but like for those that maybe are less, you know, familiar with the world of AI and how training works, like, can you give a little bit more of an explanation of like what is labeled data and why it's important for AI?
So it's best to think of these AI models or the architectures behind them, probably that these are neural networks, as almost like function approximation machines, right? What I mean by that is, let's imagine kind of, okay, all of these AI systems fundamentally take as input some observations, right, about the real world, about users, about customers, about something. And then they're trying to make some meaningful prediction from that. And this kind of relationship between what we observe and kind of what we want the model to predict is, in some sense, it can be, think of it conceptually as some function, right? Like this function could be very high dimensional. It could be indeterministic. It could be, in some sense, it's not even, can't even be enumerated in many cases, but like that is the function that we're trying these models to get to approximate as best as they can, right? And really the only way to kind of do this is for the model, for these AI systems to see tons of labeled data and then have some systematic way that they can learn from it, which is probably what the training and the optimization for these models is about. And so at the core of it, that's why labeled data, fast quantities of it and good quality of it is important, right? Because that is what we feed to these AI systems, right? So that they can learn from it and approximate this kind of functional mapping and generalize it to unseen, to unknown use cases. So conceptually, like that's why labeled data is important. And, you know, there's kind of many kind of instantiations of it, right? Like if you want to train a self-driving car, okay, it has to learn from millions of hours of like humans driving cars and, you know, seeing kind of what is like the right next move, how do they anticipate, like the next action and like few actions down the line and so on. If you want to train like a really good chatbot to reply to customer support tickets, okay, yeah. It has to learn that behavior by seeing tons of it in action, right? We want to build the best search engine in the world. Okay, yeah. At scale, that happens because Google has just billions and billions of search and user action data, right, that it can learn from. I mean, what counts as a label, I should say, is like, it varies a little bit, I guess, with kind of in the realm of pre-training versus fine-tuning. With pre-training, like, we're starting with kind of this very large corpus of what is unlabeled data, and then in something transforming it so that there is still some supervision from it, right? So there's like a few different ways to do pre-training, but a common way to do this is to mask out some specific parts of that input, right? Could be words, characters, tokens, entire sentences, and then ask the model to predict what is the thing that is masked out, right? And in some sense, then you have the model's predictions and then the ground truth, which is kind of what is actually known, but just masked out from the model. And that gives, that is like some way of creating label data in some sense for the models to learn from, right? And then when it comes to kind of fine-tuning and kind of just training anything task-specific, that's where a lot of the, you know, things like human labeling and expert kind of human judgment and data generated from that kind of comes into the picture.
WorkOS is a modern identity platform built for B2B SaaS. It provides seamless APIs for authentication, user identity, and complex enterprise features like SSO and SCIM provisioning. It's a drop-in replacement for Auth0 and supports up to 1 million monthly active users for free. It's perfect for B2B SaaS companies frustrated with high costs, opaque pricing, and lack of enterprise capabilities supported by legacy Auth vendors. The APIs are flexible and easy to use, designed to provide an effortless experience from your first user all the way to your largest enterprise customer. Today, hundreds of high-growth scale-ups are already powered by WorkOS, including ones you probably know, like Vercel, Webflow, and Loom. Check out workos.com/SED to learn more.
So a lot of times would labeling sort of fall into, like, I'm like basically giving a categorization for something. So like if you take the autonomous vehicle example, like maybe I have, footage of an accident and then I'm going to label that as an accident and essentially use that as a way to train the autonomous vehicle to maybe avoid accidents or those types of situations.
So maybe in that example, what labeling would mean is, okay, there's labeling for specific objects and kind of parts of what, you know, what driving on the road would look like, right? So here's the, you know, here's the road, here's the kind of pedestrian sidewalk, here's a tree, here's other cars, here's a truck, etc. There's a lot of that kind of labeling. And then there's like labeling for specific events or scenarios, right? Which is kind of very much like the kind of thing that you highlighted.
So I want to start to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you're doing over at Refuel. So a lot of companies are like sitting on like mountains of data that, and they don't really know how to like use it. So it's unstructured, maybe it's encrypted, stuffed in, you know, an S3 bucket somewhere. And there's data lakes and lakehouse and so forth, but those take a lot of initial work and maintenance to actually get up and drive value from them. So how do you get essentially the data into a form that's immediately useful without engineering and manual work? And what are some of the things that Refuel is doing to assist with that workflow?
So at a high level, like Refuel is a platform to help enterprises, teams label, clean, enrich their data at scale with the power of LLMs, right? And we can think of kind of working with Refuel as a three-step process where you point Refuel to where your data sets. It could be a database, it could be a data lake, it could be a set of objects sitting in S3. Typically, this data is unstructured. It's kind of just, you know, coming from either some production system that's logging that data there, or it's some dump of data that you're getting from some external source. And this is typically the starting point for most teams that want to use leverage Refuel in some way. And the first step there is define like the thing that you want to do in natural language. Could be something as simple as, hey, classify the sentiment in this piece of text into one of, you know, these three categories, but it could be arbitrarily complex, right? Imagine you have a large kind of taxonomy with hundreds of different classes, and you want to make a determination for, there's three layers of the taxonomy to first categorize, you know, this input into layer one. Then depending on kind of what that answer looks like, maybe do something conditionally downstream. But broadly think of this as very much kind of guidelines that you would describe for a domain expert or like for a human reviewer if they were going ahead and labeling this data, right? That is what it feels like. Just like define the rules.
How do you define those rules?
Broadly, like just natural language. Within the product, like we have an interface where it looks, feels very much like you're writing guidelines for a human reviewer or like for a human annotator, right? Except the annotator really happens to be an LLM that we've trained, that we've customized for these kinds of tasks. But that's what it starts with, right? Which is, so the assumption is that you as a user, as a domain expert, have a very good idea of like, what do you want to do with this data? And so like, just help us kind of codify some of that expertise in the form of a set of guidelines. And then we'll take these guidelines, we'll take the data set, that, the data that you pointed us to, and Refuel's kind of LLMs will start running the labeling job and produce a set of initial outputs, right? Along with this, like, we'll do a few things like, okay, flag things that are potentially low confidence. We'll flag things that where the input is maybe weird or outlier or noisy in some way. So essentially, like, looking at bubbling up things that would be good for you to review and provide feedback on, right? And once you give us like this initial round of feedback, we use it in real time to improve the model's predictions for the remainder of the data, right? So almost think of this active labeling type approach where you define a set of guidelines, we produce a set of results, you give us feedback, you correct potentially some of the, like, you review some of the low confidence labels, and you potentially correct ones that are, where the LLM might have made a mistake. We collect all that feedback and then label the next batch of data. And typically, like, what we've seen is within 30, 45 minutes of interacting with the system, we can get most teams, most use cases to a place where the result is at parity, potentially better than human annotators, right? And kind of in some sense, like, this is the first part of the kind of workflow where teams see a lot of value, where traditionally, if you're, you know, doing this with hiring, maintaining, training like a team of human reviewers, that process of defining the initial guidelines, getting them to label it, reviewing that work, sharing some mistakes and getting, you know, like, those iterations typically tend to be on the order of days to weeks. Whereas, you know, given that LLMs are many, many times faster, you can get that process down to something like an hour. That's the first part. And then, like, depending on kind of exactly what the final goal is, typically, like, most teams kind of do one or the other, which is sometimes like this task that they've built, they'll want to deploy that and just start using it online in some fashion and start collecting, you know, telemetry and usage data. And then at some frequency, they'll want to review this data within the platform, again, provide it feedback. And this becomes this, you know, almost like this data engine where data is being collected in real time. Some frequency, you're reviewing it, you're providing it feedback, and we're using all of this to, you know, improve the model's outputs on an ongoing basis. And then there's like another kind of set of use cases where just deploying this task with like a fairly big kind of what ultimately is like a fairly big model, multiple billions of parameters. It has, you know, some implications in terms of just what we can do there, right? In terms of latency, in terms of supporting throughput and so on. So if that is not something that is feasible for many applications, then teams would want to distill that, broadly all of that knowledge into like a much smaller task-specific model. And that's where a lot of the kind of fine-tuning comes in as well.
RudderStack is the warehouse-native customer data platform. With RudderStack, you can collect data from every source, unify it in your data warehouse or data lake to create a customer 360, and deliver it to every team and every tool for activation. RudderStack provides tools to help you guarantee data quality at the source, ensure compliance across the data lifecycle, and create model-ready data for AI and ML teams. With RudderStack, you can spend less time on low-value work and more time driving better business outcomes. Visit RudderStack.com/SED to learn more.
As a user, like, what is the output of this process that I'm getting? And then how do I know, like, when I'm done, like, how do I know essentially like how good the resulting output is?
So the output at the end of this process is transform, enrich, kind of label data that's used, that's ready to be plugged into some downstream kind of application that you have in mind, right? As a user, it could be for training downstream models. It could be for powering a set of product features in whatever product that you're building. In some cases, it could be a lot of our kind of users, customers are data providers in some ways, where the data that they clean and enrich using Refuel's platform, like, is valuable just as a product offering for them. How do I know it's any good? It's broadly like this, you know, area of evals, as it's called colloquially in like the LLM ecosystem, is a, I would say it's a fairly active area of discussion, debate, development. And there's a few reasons for it. I mean, A, like, just, you know, the ecosystem is fairly new. We're, I think we're still just beginning to learn how do we evaluate LLMs. But at the core of it, it does have to be, at least in our view, it has to be some comparison in some fashion to what the expected output is, that, you know, in some sense, like humans should be the judge at the end of it, right? And there is the question of like, okay, what data do you evaluate it on? What set of metrics do you use? Because there is a set of broad like LLM benchmarks that are, you know, publicly used. And we think like that those are often not the most helpful when it comes to evaluating how good is this model and the data that it did produce for my specific task and for my specific use case. Bunch of like different kind of LLM leaderboards, benchmarks that are kind of used publicly. And those are good, I think, for if you want to get like a very kind of high level, low granularity view, I would say, of just distinguishing kind of like the good candidate models from the not so good ones, which is fine. Like I think it's a good first filter. But then often they're not, either the set of metrics that these measure are not super well aligned with your specific task, or they're not discriminative enough, right? Like for it's like, okay, what is the performance difference of like 1-1.5% mean on the specific benchmark, like for my specific use case? So yeah, we're big fans of tasks, like what we think of as task-specific evaluations, where depending on the kind of task that you're asking the LLM to do, is it a classification task, extraction, is it a freeform generation, is it, yeah, like what is the expected output would depend on that task. And then like there's a question of like, what is a set of things that we should measure there? Typically, like, yeah, think of this as kind of something that measures quality and then something that measures how faithful is the model. Like, basically, like, what is the likelihood that it's hallucinating? So those are like the two kind of important considerations for teams that are using the tool.
Yeah. And even hallucinations are sort of context, like, dependent. Absolutely. Like, if you're writing a children's story, like, hallucinations might be okay. But if I'm trying to pull Mark Twain quotes, then maybe it's not as okay. And also, like, I mean, I think you're kind of getting into this, like, there's a lot of nuance in terms of, like, how do you actually measure quality? Because a lot of it is task-specific, and some of it's probably dependent on, like, you actually need, like, human feedback in terms of, is this meet the quality bar for the thing that I'm trying to accomplish, essentially?
Yeah, absolutely.
So why can't I just, you know, take my data and use something like OpenAI's, like, APIs directly to do something like this?
It's a great question. To be honest, like a lot of users, customers that come to us do start there. And I would say it's, you know, it's a very fine place to start. To some extent, it's a testament to like just how good these models are out of the box, right? And how easy they are to use. Just literally a sign up and an API call away. So it's a really great place to really understand like, hey, is this LLM within the realm of a kind of potential solution candidate for like the use case that I have, right? Where if I want to prototype something real quick, that's often like a really great place to start. But I think kind of when you spend some time with these systems, typically we've seen kind of users run into one or more of the kind of the following challenges, right? Which is there's a challenge of output quality. Okay, yes, OpenAI, Anthropic, yeah. I think probably all of these kind of state-of-the-art but closed behind API only kind of models have more or less like the same strengths and weaknesses, right? Which is they're very good generalists at thousands of possible tasks, but they aren't specialists at that one specific task or like a few specific tasks that you care about. And so they're great to, you know, go from 0 to 75, 80, 85% accuracy, but then how do you get it to 96, 98% accuracy and reliably that you actually need to put this in front of your users, right? Or like to actually kind of plug it into production. So that's one challenge that we've seen. The other challenge is scale and throughput. GPT-4, Claude 3, especially like some of the kind of most powerful Claude 3 models, they ultimately like they are multiple tens of billions of parameters, even with like mixture of expert type architectures and so on, where, yeah, there's just, I mean, no getting around the fact that, you know, it costs a certain amount of money to run them, and it has some implications in terms of latency and like the scale of throughput that they can support. And then like, yeah, I mean, one other kind of consideration that we've seen is just around privacy and security, especially for some domains. So yeah, these are like a few kind of observations that we've seen in terms of like, okay, it's great to start there, but then oftentimes it's not enough just to do that. And you need like a set of layers on top of these kind of core LLM APIs.
Yeah. So I would think also beyond just the sort of tuning of the LLM for this specific task, you also have like the workflow support. Like
exactly.
Like, sure, I can go to ChatGPT and even have it help me write code rather than using a coding copilot, but it's like more effort to go to the browser, like it's a less integrated experience, and it's not really designed for that specific workflow of, in this example, writing code, or in your example, I think the workflow is probably even more complicated where there's more sort of like tuning, feedback loop, and ultimately like I need to produce some sort of like asset that I can actually use for going and then fine tuning my model or doing whatever it is I need to do with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, absolutely, Sean. So we think of kind of the core infrastructure in three layers. There's the core kind of base LLM. That's where its interface is pretty simple, but it's very, very powerful at what it does, right? It's input prompt, output tokens. Then there's the data management layer on top of it, right? That is actually doing this kind of collection of feedback, indexing it, sampling from it in real time for things like few-shot learning. It's doing the job of maintaining kind of this data set that is the evaluation data set. And like a lot of this kind of, there's like the integrations into a bunch of external stores and so on, right? So there's that layer. And then there's like the core kind of product of the workflow layer on top of it, right? Which is how users mostly interact with this, which is that is where you define the task, you see these kind of, you can iterate on guidelines, you can provide feedback, you can understand kind of which predictions changed from one version of the prompt to the next one. And so a lot of this kind of just, you know, tooling that has catered and tailored towards the kinds of use cases that people want to use Refuel for.
Mm-hmm. What can you share about how the like LLM part of the infrastructure works? Like how did you, were you basically fine tuning a more foundational model to be specifically built for like data cleaning and labeling, or like how does some of that stuff work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say there's two components there. So we have our own LLM and we can share some details about that. But at the end of the day, we are LLM kind of agnostic. We do support any of the state-of-the-art LLMs that, you know, people might want to use, explore, try out, including OpenAI, Claude, Gemini, and so on. Right? That said, like, yes, what we've found, what we've seen is that none of these models provide state-of-the-art performance when it comes to this very specific set of tasks, right? Like around data labeling and cleaning, which is why, I mean, we had to basically go out and build our own model to do this well. And to do this also, there's like the quality consideration, but there's also the consideration of, you know, how do we get it to scale and how do we build something that is like, that can then be customized further for specific customers and specific use cases, right? So yeah, this LLM, we call it Refuel LLM. It's something that we built and released a few months ago. We're training actually a new version of that right now. So we'll see. Maybe by the time this episode goes out, it might already be released or might be on the verge of releasing. I don't know. But yeah, as part of building this out, like we don't start model pre-training from scratch. We do start with a powerful base model. Think of a Llama 2 or a mixture of experts type architecture. But then we do extensive instruction tuning on top of it. So think of sort of like, yeah, the kinds of data sets that we've collected amount to, you know, something like in the previous iteration, this was, I think, about 2,500 different kind of tasks, data sets that are very much in this kind of domain of labeling, but then they're problem area agnostic. So we'll have data sets from public internet, from, you know, law, from finance, from e-commerce, credit cards, et cetera. Most of it is publicly available. Some of it, like, yeah, we just had to go out and license that data so that we can use it. But yeah, that becomes sort of like the raw kind of basis. And then, of course, there's some amount of curation, cleaning, some amount of labeling that we do internally as well to create this data asset that we then use to tune like this base model and then, you know, have it be purpose-built for labeling, enrichment, cleaning type tasks.
Now, what's your sort of like your tool chain behind the scenes in order to go from creating a new version of the model to actually like pushing it to production? Like what is that like MLOps tool chain? Have you had to... Are you using a combination of like existing stuff, or have you had to build some stuff to support the actual like productionization and pushing these models to production and using them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the answer is a little bit different for two workflows. So there's the workflow for training and building Refuel LLM, which is not a kind of daily or weekly type activity, right? Like it's, we'll at least with the, you know, size and scale that we're at, like we'll probably do that like once every few months. And then there's the customer specific fine tuning workflow that is very much, you know, like is something that is part of our product, where customers will, using the data that they have collected within the platform and labeled, they'll want to use all of that to further customize any of the base models that they're using, right? Including refuel LLM. And so that is like a lot more kind of much more frequent. So I think the answer is like a little bit different for both of these, like, but probably like the latter is the one that's probably more relevant here. And so yeah, for that, I mean, we do rely a lot on just open source kind of tools to do this. Yeah, like I've used Transformers from Hugging Face as the kind of base library to be able to, you know, train these models, along with accelerators like DeepSpeed and FSTP. I mean, our training infrastructure is, we use like a combination of training like GPU providers, but I mean, all of our core infrastructure is on AWS. And yeah, if GPUs are available there, we'll train there. If not, there's like a few other different providers that we use as well. And then in terms of, yeah, actually serving these models, yeah, I mean, we use TGI, like text generation inference engine, which is like an open source project again by Hugging Face. So we leverage that quite extensively. And then there's like a bunch of other tools around, like, you know, monitoring, training runs with tools like weights and biases. And yeah, the thing that we have had to build out a bit custom is everything to do with evaluation, because yeah, like it's the one that is very kind of task specific. And yeah, I mean, there really isn't something that at least we found in the current ecosystem that we can just plug in as it is directly. And that said, like, it is one of the more important problems to solve for on behalf of our customers. So yeah, that's something that we have had to do a little bit custom. Yeah.
For the customer specific, you know, modeling that you're doing, is there some like, you know, versioning of those models as well?
Yes, absolutely. So any specific application for which a customer might want to fine tune a model, think of like a lineage of models that we maintain. And these are snapshot, and they're, yeah, like with each snapshot, there is some understanding of exactly what data went into training these, what is the kind of performance. And yeah, you can, as a user, you can decide to kind of, yeah, roll back, delete, switch to older snapshots, et cetera.
Okay. And then sort of like outside of exactly what you're doing, but just based on your experience and maybe some of the customers that you're working with, like, what are some of the trends you're seeing in terms of how companies are building with LLMs? Like, are most companies starting to use, you know, multiple models, private models, or are they sticking primarily with like public models like a GPT?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll say like we'll probably see two broad categories of use cases emerge that are powered by LLMs. There's the generate, and maybe like, I'm not sure if this is, probably there's better terminology for this, but I think of it as the generative use cases and the predictive use cases. Generative use cases are, you know, the classic kind of co-pilot for X kinds of a use case, right? Where there is typically a human in the loop. These are ultimately meant for human consumption. And, you know, it's for augmenting knowledge work, right? Is one way to put it. Think of, you know, coding co-pilots, think of writing co-pilots, like things where it's traditionally the domain of knowledge work. And we're supercharging this by having this very powerful assistant. The predictive use cases are almost kind of, in some sense, these are problems that are a lot more closer and relevant to refuel. But these are typically completely automated and almost like these used to be done traditionally either with like, you know, large kind of armies of human operators or some system of rules, like rule engines, or even like traditional kind of ML models, right? And we're seeing all of that converge to basically just be built on this new substrate of LLMs. And these are, compared to generative use cases, these tend to be like fairly kind of high volume and they're typically completely automated. That they're for, yeah, like it's kind of, you know, fairly infeasible for if there were to be a human in the loop, for example, for reviewing every single prediction that comes out of these models, right? For the powering that kind of use case. So this is maybe one cut on kind of what we're seeing in terms of trends and how companies are leveraging LLMs. In terms of like the how of it, yeah, you said it quite correctly. Like I think we're moving to a multi-model world, where there's going to be always some powerful kind of frontier models. Think of, you know, the GPT-4, Claude 3, Geminis of the world. And then at the same time, there is this kind of, you know, very rich and vibrant ecosystem of open source models where that are still very good out of the box. But really, like the value addition, I would think of is like that they're a lot more customizable and you have a lot more control over them, right? So yeah, you'll typically start with something that is very powerful and then build on top of it. For, again, like leveraging your own enterprise's proprietary data. And yeah, of course, advise you things like control and, you know, potentially better cost and so on.
Isn't that a little bit, though, like running like installed software on-prem versus using like a managed service on the cloud?
I think so. So yes, in some ways, for sure, at least on the axis of control, I think that is like a very good way to look at it. I do think there is, at least with where the models are currently at, I do think the kind of customizability piece is quite important to get quality right in most cases, where maybe we don't quite see that much need for customizability, let's say, you know, for like traditional software, right? Where the only access kind of to think about is like, hey, am I okay with like a SaaS hosted somewhere else kind of use of this software versus do I need it to be on my premises? So maybe we'll, you know, a few years out, like when kind of these models get super, super powerful, like we might see the need to do that less, but at least like where things stand today, I mean, most of these models do need some form of customizability. Now it could be, I'm not saying kind of fine-tuning is the only way to do it, but it does tend to be a very powerful way at least today. There's, of course, other options around like, you know, what we kind of what is thought of as retrieval augmented generation, where we're not modifying any model parameters, but rather we're just focusing on supplying it like the right context and it can reason through it. Yeah,
I think that makes a lot of sense. Like it's sort of like a byproduct of the immaturity of the market. Like I guess it would be similar to even in the sort of managed service versus like I need to get in and tweak parameters type of experience today is like companies that are operating at a certain level of scale, like let's say you're running a Postgres database, then running that on AWS RDS is probably going to get you to a certain like level of scale. But at some point when you reach beyond that, then you have to do something that's a little bit more custom where you can actually get in and like customize it so you can do like, you know, horizontal sharding or maybe even use something like Postgres extensions to extend the database for your specific use case or whatever. But you don't need to do that from day one in sort of the database world today because databases have been around for 50 years. So they've done a lot of work to make it work for most people. But LLMs haven't been around that long. They've only been around for like less than 10 years. So there's a lot more work to be done to get them to a place where they just kind of work out of the box for most people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly how I look at it.
So with LLMs, they're basically kind of slurping up a lot of human-created content for training material. But now LLMs are capable of generating like a tremendous amount of content. So at some point, the LLM-generated content that exists on the internet is going to dwarf the amount of like human-generated content. So I was curious about your thoughts on this. Like, is this feedback loop where AI is trained on mostly AI-generated content going to be a problem at some point?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So, okay, maybe let me answer the more kind of a slightly more constrained version of that question, which is there value in LLM-generated or like synthetic data broadly to improve model performance?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is kind of, again, like one of these very active discussion debate areas within the LLM community, I would say. But we've definitely seen good signs of this. And, you know, I'll maybe to share a couple of examples, like, so there's this paper that came out, I believe last year or the year before called Textbooks Are All You Need. And again, it's kind of, you know, a play on kind of attention is all you need kind of paper from a few years back. But basically it made the case that like high quality training data is important and you can prompt it correctly. You can get LLMs to generate this high quality data. And of course it needs some amount of curation and post-processing downstream of it, do things like removal of duplicates, removing things that are very likely to be hallucinations. So there is, of course, like some amount of expert kind of curation involved downstream, but this problem of kind of like, is there some value in generated kind of synthetic data? I think is like, I would say like the answer to that is more likely yes than no. And yeah, there have been subsequently like a few other papers kind of, you know, that just research efforts that broadly kind of point to this direction. There's like the self-instruct paper that kind of makes like broadly like where the takeaway was very similar. And like, yeah, a few other things as well. Even if that's the case, it's a bit hard to know exactly what is the impact of this at scale, which is kind of where the original question was like, which is, okay, let's, you know, let's play this out 5-10 years in the future, or well, maybe in 2 years in the future, where, you know, just creating content like used to be a lot more friction, a lot more effort, and needed a lot more kind of just creativity and like human hours. And yeah, now that's kind of, you know, that can be multiplied by a factor of 10, 100, 1,000. And what does that do? It's, I wish I knew the answer to that question affirmatively. I'm not sure. I think what's more likely is that just the ways in which we collect and curate this data, prepare this for subsequent kind of, you know, feature training will need to evolve and adapt to account for this. Because, yeah, like the distribution of data, the kind of properties that it has, the kinds of strengths and weaknesses that it has, like, is going to be different compared to human-generated data. And, like, we do see that. I mean, you know, broadly, yeah, there was, like, this fun study I recently came across that kind of tried to look at, like, that tried to study what percentage of peer reviews tend to be, like, ChatGPT-generated at these kind of academic conferences. And, you know, it was, like, quite evident, like, by just the distribution of tokens, for example, that are peer reviews, that, okay, yeah, there's this, like, this massive spike since, like, last year or so. But yeah, I mean, broadly, I think what this will mean in practical terms, at least that's my kind of assumption, is that we'll just evolve how we collect and kind of, you know, parse, curate this data so that ultimately it does still end up being useful for LLM training.
Yeah, I think like at the moment anyway, like based on my own experience, like the thing that you're talking about with the peer reviews, like if you're like a heavy ChatGPT user, I think you can see certain patterns in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Length of a paragraph, length of a sentence, certain words come up more frequently than probably like a human would write. So there are signals, at least today, and who knows, like in a few years from now, as the models get better, will the variance level in terms of the output get better? But today there's definitely patterns that are recognizable as like an LLM generated piece of content.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we start to wrap up, what's next for Refuel? And is there anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're a small team. We're 8 people now. And I mean, since the start of the year, we've had something like close to 1,000x growth in terms of like just the volume of data that we've been processing on a monthly basis. So yeah, just like a lot of the team's efforts today, at least on product and infrastructure side, are focused on scaling, stability, and just ensuring that, you know, things kind of, that we can manage some of this growth and, you know, like, and our users and customers don't have to kind of bear the brunt of it, which occasionally happens. And, you know, sorry, folks, for that. But yeah, we're doing the best we can. So I think that's part of it. And we see that kind of just being an important area where the team invests in for like the next 3 to 6 months. There's a lot of research happening in the field of improving LLM output quality, reliability, and kind of training efficiency. Things like low-rank adapters, for example, that make training a lot more parameter efficient. There's, you know, things around like reduced precision inference, that basically where you can very aggressively quantize like the model weights and still get to a good output. So yeah, probably what can we learn and, you know, incorporate into our product and in our infrastructure is one other kind of ongoing area of investment for us. And yeah, that there's, you know, kind of, yeah, training feature and better versions of our own LLM that kind of, you know, broadly powers a lot of our product use cases. These are like a few areas where, you know, I foresee the team investing in terms of product and infrastructure.
On the infrastructure side, are there unique like scaling challenges or maybe scale challenges that get introduced earlier due to the nature of doing work with these AI models?
Like earlier compared to like building...
Yeah, if you were doing, like, you know, basically anything else, like a B2B, like more standard non-AI based like application, or is it sort of just business as usual? Like we need to scale out our infrastructure. We're going to need more servers. We need to, you know, run in more regions or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So I would say it is ultimately like the same kinds of challenges, which is like, yeah, just around resources and managing resources to like match with throughput and so on. But I think just given how young the kind of, you know, broadly the ecosystem is, it does tend to be harder and you do have to face it a lot more earlier because, yeah, like, for example, like cloud providers have fairly good, I think, managed offerings for a lot of different software and infrastructure things, right? Like your database, go to RDS, like I need a Kafka queuing solution. Okay, yeah, just you know, use Kinesis. You need a massive kind of scaling key value store. Okay, just use Dynamo. And of course, like if you're actually innovating as a business in those areas, of course, it would make sense to like not use those. But at least with like when it comes to supporting LLM training and inference at scale, like unfortunately, there just isn't too many kind of good out-of-the-box solutions. There's tools that we can rely and leverage, which we do. But yeah, beyond that, it's, yeah, like things like, okay, how do you even benchmark LLM throughput, right? Is kind of not a very trivial question, I would say, because there's kind of, yes, like there's things at the level of requests, but then you have to account for like, okay, what are each of these types of requests like in, you know, in terms of input and output tokens, because input tokens, it's much more easy to scale. Output tokens are very hard, you know, almost like your latency increases linearly as a function of like the length of the output. And then, yeah, like, anyway, but that's like an example of just like, okay, these are some of the best practices for how to do this and how to do this well are still being figured out and written. And so it's a challenge, but it's also part of the fun, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Neat. Yeah. Thanks you so much for being here. This was a really interesting conversation, and I'm excited to see what Refuel continues to build and come out with.
Certainly, yeah. Thanks so much, Sean. It was really great chatting with you, and see you around.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, thank you.